Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hammer Down on the Market Scale Network. I'm your host, Mike Bush, and today I am joined by Craig Shapiro with Domerico. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. Good to be here.
Man, tell me a little bit about your company.
Okay, so Domerico Express, founded in 1971. Good morning, Santosh. Born out of the brain drain that ran from China during the revolution, born out of the tech industry. You guys are all too young to remember when everything was made in Taiwan back in the day. Born out of that, 50 years later, we are a major player in the international logistics world. We sit at the same table with all of the other big names in the game.
Got it. So Craig, when I heard the way you explained that, I mean, I want to make sure I've got this right. So often in shipping in America, we hear about, oh, you know, there's this freight forwarder, there's this company, and it's usually an American company who's working with companies overseas. You guys seem to have taken the reverse approach and said, okay, we're going to establish our practice in Asia. And as goods start to flow into various countries, we're going to be kind of the catalyst to help that. Is that right?
Absolutely. I often say to clients when I meet them for the first time that it's very possible and very likely that you've never heard of Domerico here in the U.S. But what I offer them is call your suppliers and your shippers overseas, specifically in China, and ask them if they've ever heard of Domerico. If they haven't, I will never call you or bother you again. our logo, Mike, is connecting Asia to the world.
Got it. Okay.
With almost 80 offices in China alone. They all fly our flag, right? They have our same system. They are our sisters and brothers over there. So we have the network there. And our slogan is connecting Asia to the world. And that's what we do.
Craig, you may not want to answer this one. And if so, I totally understand. We can cut it out in post. There's a new president coming in who seems to have an awful aggressive agenda when it comes to tariffs and importing and goods out of Asia. What are you telling shippers and how are you helping them prepare for what's coming?
Okay. Well, the first thing, as I was discussing with colleagues internally this morning, is what we are witnessing is a political chess game, right? It's a chess game. And today, I believe Mexico president just moved her pawn, right? Basically for me right now, the most important thing is just to alleviate the anxiety that's surrounding all of these tariffs. And right now, what we have is a lot of talk. We have nothing concrete on paper yet. So there's a lot of anxiety right now. What is going to happen? Okay.
Right.
And of course, you know, the roller coaster ride of rates of late is another issue that we work with our clients to help them navigate through. Right. And of course, you know, with China plus one and many clients and potential clients with vast global, you know, new global initiatives, you know, we have to be able to kind of support them, especially in this new world. The geopolitical turmoil and uncertainty has created great anxiety amongst our clients. So our job right now is to calm everyone down, I believe.
Got it. Greg, you made a really interesting point. It was one I hadn't thought about yet. So if I look back at the past 5 years, right, we had a global pandemic, and there was a point where I think it was $23,000 per container from Asia into the West Coast port. We're not going to see that level of import cost again. So theoretically, if a container is, let's say, and I'm going to use easy math, right, because I'm not that smart, if a container drops down to $10,000, which is half what it used to be, and then you look at that tariff, and that, let's say the tariff adds another $10,000. Theoretically, there's a way that shippers might actually be coming out of head from their absolute peak pandemonium. Is that right?
In a very weirdly logical way, yes. Excuse me. That is, they are under the worst scenario currently, even with the worst case with tariffs, they would be better off than they would be during, 2020 rates and 2021 rates.
Sure.
I think Mike, it raises an interesting question. What really happens moving forward, right? Can the small importers that can't really pass these additional costs on to their customers, what's going to happen to them? So I think what you might start seeing is a lot more conversations now with clients and their factories overseas, right, to help us mitigate these new tariffs. Because if we go out of business, you lose one more customer in the United States, and we're not going to be the only one. And you see how the ripple effect could cause more anxiety in China as well, right?
Sure. Greg, how did you get into this, man? What made you wake up in the morning and say, I want to help Asian companies get their goods into American hands?
I always liked boxes when I was a kid. I know it's a very simplistic answer, but I always felt I was on the plane looking out the window. I was fascinated when they would load, how they would load the suitcases on the plane as a young child, right? And I was very fortunate growing up. My mother is European, so we were able to travel quite a bit. She made a point that we would know our family in Europe, right? And when you do that as a young child, you're exposed to the world. And when you're exposed to the world at such a young age, there's excitement in that, right? And I carried that through my whole life. And I always took great pleasure in meeting people from other cultures and understanding. I knew very young that we live in a very big world. And the best way to work in that world is to understand and accept different cultures, right? And work with them instead of against them. So from a very young age, I knew it, and I knew I wanted to do something international. And I walked into a recruiter's office in San Francisco as a simple 24-year-old, and no one knew what to do there. She gave me a list of these companies called freight forwarders, and this was last century, guys. And the first name on the list was a very large Japanese company, and I showed up for the interview, and the rest was history.
Got it. So Craig, if I think of the folks that we try to create the show for, it's really folks that are younger in their careers and maybe thinking about supply chain. Walk me through, and I know this is going to sound like a silly question, but what exactly is a freight forwarder? How do they compare to a 3PL or a 4PL? Because Lord knows we have too much jargon. What very specifically are you focused on?
Okay. So, the quick elevator pitch I would give to people, I am in the global logistics and freight forwarding. Well, what is that? We help facilitate all the services, documentation, all the requirements that are mandated by both an exporting country and an importing country to facilitate moving goods from point A to point B.
I love that answer, man. And it's such a perfect, simple answer to a
complicated.
Exactly.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
You got it exactly, man.
3PL, 4PL. When people use that, I simply ask them, well, what is it that you need? Let's start with that, right?
Sure. No, I love that answer. And I think for folks who don't know the world of international shipping, Chris Mims wrote a great book called Arriving Today. Yep. And he traces a micro USB chip, the type of thing we'd plug into our phone, from creation in Vietnam to home delivery in Minnesota, and all the steps and paperwork and crazy. And that stupid little plug goes through like 30 sets of hands in order to arrive in somebody's hand so they can plug it into the wall. And it's various companies, it's various customs groups, it's various this, that, the other. My favorite part of that entire book is the fact that as the vessel that's touting this particular charger rolls into the port of LA Long Beach, LA Long Beach sends out basically the world's most advanced valet parking, right? We send a guy whose job is to jump from a speedboat onto the giant steamship and then parallel park this thing. And it's so interesting. All of that book makes me so happy. I love the way you phrase that, Craig. So with that audience in mind, what's the piece of advice if you could talk to your younger self or talk to a newer recent college grad and they said, I'm thinking about supply chain or I'm thinking about logistics. What advice, what's the one nugget you would want that kid to take with them?
I thought about a lot that question, Mike, obviously I had it in advance and I was speaking with some people. I'm currently in our DeMerco Phoenix office. I'm based in San Diego, but ask a lot of questions. If you see a truck driver, talk to the truck driver, ask him, because logistics is book and text and education and Incoterms and 4PL and 3PL and words like that. But then there's another side to logistics, as I believe everyone in this call would know, that exists by experience, and you have to live it to really understand it, right? So I would say to the young people out there that if you are serious about getting into the world of logistics, get interested. If you see a truck is logistics, right? A guy or a girl working in a warehouse, that's logistics. Ask questions. Ask the truck driver. Ask him to look. Can I look? Can I watch you? You'd be very surprised that what people will offer young people that opportunity, right?
Of course.
So it's really just, if you're interested in it, get in it and understand what it is, which is everything, the truck, the warehouse, the store, the shelf, right? The loading dock. Get interested. Ask questions. Go into a store, ask the person, how do they receive goods, right? Understand the world around you and you'll have a much better understanding of the textbook that you are reading in a classroom. And Mike, I would just add to that, in this current world that we live in, it would be anyone interested in getting into this logistics world, you must read the news. You must know what's going on in the world to be able to speak about logistics. 20 years ago, right? Maybe not so as important, right? You could separate the two. You can't anymore. So to the young people out there, know your world. Know your world you live in, right? And talk to people, ask questions, be interested.
I love that answer, Craig. So, hey, I know your PR people pretty well. I've gotten to know them over the years. And I know that they take the time to prep their customers. Is there any question I haven't asked you that I should have? Or more importantly, is there anything that Santosh and Charlie's team told you, hey, this is something we want you to touch on, but I haven't given you the opportunity to say yet?
The only thing, I tell you, the hardest thing I had to think about, what is the coolest thing I've done in logistics and supply chain?
I love that question.
You know, when I was a kid, I would have to, you know, there were maybe three things I could think of. Now I have to reach into a vast vault of experiences. And to that point, I would tell the same young person, be a master of your experiences. Everything that you live in your life can be applied to logistics and supply chain. Mike, I've seen it all. I remember as a young kid watching moving a satellite out of Japan. And, you know, when you're 24 years old and you're asked to take off your shoes, your jacket, your tie, leave your big Motorola brick cell phone, just to go in and talk and have a conversation. To me, that was very exciting at 24 years old.
That's awesome.
Now, you know, DeMarco, we've worked on a tremendous amount of renewable energy projects.
Gotcha. Right?
And I love the projects, right? Because you have a flat piece of land one day and a year later, you're generating energy from the sun. And I find that to be a very interesting process that I'd like to get involved with whenever possible.
No, I love that. And, you know, when you look at like the clean energy movement, not only just in terms of, so I think maybe like the logistics nerd in me is like, oh, you know, we're switching to zero emission trucking. And, you know, there was an article this morning about LA Long Beach getting five electric trains to pilot this, that, the other. And I think it's really easy to focus on the supply chain side of or the logistics side of solar or clean energy or hydrogen or whatever it might be. But I tend to forget, oh, right. We need solar panels for that. We need to move hydrogen from point A to point B. There's an entire supply chain between this supply chain transformation into zero emission. And I think that's really interesting as well.
Absolutely. And that's what intrigues me about that, right? So the other thing I would say to the young people out there is, man, if you're ever going to get into logistics, now's the time. I mean, look at what's going on. We live in a completely different world where, listen, no one even knew what we did, Mike, until a dozen eggs cost $9.
And there was no toilet paper on shelves.
And there was no toilet paper on the shelves. Now everybody knows what we do for a living, right?
So absolutely.
There couldn't be a more interesting time with new administration coming in, even with all the geopolitical turmoil in the world. It's an exciting time to be. It's a very testing and difficult at times time to be in our industry, but it's a very interesting time also.
Craig, one of the things I heard you touch on in that last question was the China Plus One strategy as a way to combat tariffs. Let's first talk about what that means and then talk about this second round of potential tariffs and how that might be transformative. So China Plus One, if I'm a shipper or manufacturer, what am I thinking when it comes to China Plus One?
Okay, so China plus one is basically your theory of let's not put all of our eggs in one basket, in a very simplistic way of explaining it, right? If all of our manufacturing and all of our suppliers are in China, right? Anything that happens, tariffs, geopolitical turmoil, tensions, it's highly affecting our business, right? So let's spread the eggs out into other baskets. That's China plus one. Personally, I believe China plus one has been happening for years. I think companies maybe 10, 15 years ago had already started thinking we have too many eggs in the China basket. We need to spread them around a little bit, right? And I think that the discussion of China plus one was only accelerated, in 2017 when the first round of the tariffs came into effect. That only accelerated the pace of the conversations and the actual physical moves of companies out of China into other areas like Vietnam or Indonesia. Right.
Sure. Now, speaking of that first round of tariffs, the first Trump presidency, a lot of, like, for instance, electronics companies who historically have come out of Asia said, okay, we're going to move all of our production or half of our production into Eastern Europe, which opens up an entirely different shipping world, right? You're not going China to the west coast of the US. You're going Europe to the east coast. And generally speaking, the feeling is that the east to west movement of goods is not really something the US has typically been great at. How did that first experience, that experience, you know, 7 years ago or 8 years ago of what tariffs would be, prepare companies for today?
I think that's a good question. I think that a lot of the companies started very early to investigate and look in and gather intel on what it would actually mean to make that move. I think you have companies now that are entering the game a little late, we could call it, right, for lack of a more appropriate way of saying it. They're entering the game late. So now they're going to the countries that have already paved their roads and fixed their ports. And now they're trying to get into those countries that offered them a better deal 5 years ago. And now they have to take whatever deal they can. But with the pending tariffs, they will have no choice, right? And they'll have to make the move.
Gotcha. Now, thinking that through, of course, right? Like one of the most interesting things I heard this year, I was at a conference and I heard Noel Hasegawa, who runs the port of Long Beach, he's their chief operating officer, said something along the lines of, nearshoring is great for Long Beach. The production of goods in Mexico is great for Long Beach because what happens is there's no port in Mexico right now, to your point just a second ago, there's no port in Mexico right now that can support a vessel with 20,000 containers. So what's happening is you've got goods coming from Asia, they're landing in LA Long Beach, they're being trucked down to Mexico to be assembled and then brought back up. Trump announced recently that he was considering tariffs on Mexico and Canada. Does that mean this strategy is going to disappear, assuming that the tariffs come to be? Because you made the point earlier, Craig, that, you know, we've got a lot of ideas right now. We haven't actually seen pen to paper.
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure I'm going to answer correctly or to the right way, but I think they work. They're hand in hand. Shipper importers are watching, they're gathering, they're setting things up in Mexico. They have the infrastructure in place down there. They have all their factories and the maquiladoras along the border and waiting to see how bad the tariffs will be. Are the tariffs going to be bad enough that we have to make a complete global change, right? Or can we absorb the tariffs,
right? Right.
So again, as we move further into this chess game, it'll be more interesting to see when things really do get finalized. But for right now, it's sort of a waiting game, but also a time to be setting things up for a worst case scenario.
Craig, if you were advising a startup that was building an actual product today, so right around Thanksgiving 2024, where would you tell them to put their manufacturing facilities?
I would tell them that based on everything that I have seen in the last, say, 2 to 3 years, I would put those factories as close to home as possible. Not that there's anything in general that is wrong moving freight from Asia to we do that. That is what we do, right? Yeah. but there's a lot of space and time between Asia and here, transit time, right? And there's a lot of things that can happen along the way, right? And maybe it's not in China, as we're all, Suez Canal, right? Changed the face of global logistics overnight, right?
Yep.
So I think it's really kind of understanding all of that, right? And to understand that they go hand in hand together.
Understood. Hey, Craig, if somebody wants to reach out and get in touch with you, find out more about Demerico, find out about your career path, et cetera, what's the best way to do so?
www.demerco.com, D-I-M-E-R-C-O.com. Everything you'll need on our website.
Perfect. He's Craig Shapiro. I'm Mike Bush. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great holiday season.
You too. Thank you, Mike. Thanks, guys.